I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. All right, good evening and welcome to Doubting Dogma. I am Molly Ann Mormon, and again, I'm going to be trying to fly it solo tonight, so let's see how it goes. This is coming to you a bit late. I am recording on Tuesday the 9th, but given the recent events within the church, I thought it was a good idea to record anyways, even though it's in the middle of the week. I should have recorded over the weekend and all kinds of stuff. But anyways, let's go. For those that didn't hear, I know a few people tagged me on Facebook about it. Thomas S. Monson, who was the president of the Mormon Church, passed away. And he had been in the Quorum of the Twelve and the presidency of the church for, golly, as long as I can remember. And as a kid, like during General Conference, which happens in April and October, he was one of my favorite speakers. 'Cause he would always tell stories, and it wasn't always the same old, you know, just beating of the scriptures and doctrines over your head. It was stories about when he was a kid and stories about this and that, and it just, and I always liked stories, so he was one of my favorite speakers. But I don't know, within the past couple years, like I haven't listened to General Conference in forever, but my sister had said that the past few General Conferences, like he was rambling and almost slurring his words and just stumbling over ideas, and she speculated that he may be suffering, or may have been, since he's gone now, he may have been suffering from dementia, which is entirely possible. He was 90 when he passed away, but I don't want to speculate on his health conditions because I haven't been paying attention. But, I mean, I find it very interesting, especially when I started seeing the reports saying that he was only the 16th president, and I was sitting there and I was like, wait, we had more than that, didn't we? No, apparently not. See how much I've been paying attention to what used to be my church. But, so I looked it up, and yeah, he was the 16th president, and I have lived through five of them. Because when I was a kid, it was Spencer W. Kimball. And then I want to say he passed away when I was only like 4 or 5. And then it was Ezra Taft Benson. And I don't remember much about him because, as I recall, he was in very poor health and was confined to bed a lot. Or maybe I was thinking of Spencer W. Kimball with that. I don't know. That was also long ago. But I remember when he passed away, and then Howard W. Hunter became the next president. And this was when I was in junior high, because Howard W. Hunter was only the president of the church for something like 8 or 9 months before he passed away. And I remember in my high school speech class, we had to give like a eulogy on somebody. And so I did a eulogy on Howard W. Hunter because I didn't know anyone who had ever passed away other than my grandma had passed away when I was like, I don't know, 3 or something. I don't even remember. But like that was my first, I don't know, that was like my first time sitting there remembering, like distinctly remembering the prophet, well, the president of the church, when he was sustained and he was gone. And that's when I sort of learned more about the succession process. Because after Howard W. Hunter, it was Gordon B. Hinckley, and after Gordon B. Hinckley, it was Thomas S. Monson. And the way it has been since, I want to say John Taylor, it is the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles who will then succeed the late president of the church. So, for those that don't understand the setup of the Mormon hierarchy, you've got the president of the church, aka the prophet, air quotes. So you've got, which that was Thomas S. Monson. And then he has his first and second counselors, and that then comprises the first presidency of the church. And so they're the ones on top of the whole pyramid, right? And then just below them is the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. And if, like, one of the counselors to the president can be the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, this all gets very confusing, but while he's serving as the president, or as one of the president's counselors, the second most senior, not by age but by ordination date, the second most senior member of the Quorum of the 12 is then the acting president of the Quorum of the 12. So, golly, I feel like I'm just rambling a bunch of nonsense that none of y'all care about, so I apologize for that. I'm just trying to voice some of this and explain the craziness that goes on here. So, once the prophet dies, the first presidency is dissolved, and those two counselors of his are then, like, absorbed back into the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. So then it's like the Quorum of the 14 Apostles for a little bit. And then the most senior ranking, which is the president of the Quorum of the 12, which at this moment is Russell M. Nelson. The president of the Quorum of the 12 will then be, I guess, unanimously voted into the president's position by the other members of the 12. And then he will select his two counselors. And if the next higher up becomes one of his counselors, then someone else, again, gets to be the presiding president of the Quorum. If you've ever been in the military, just think about when the first sergeant goes away somewhere and the operations sergeant has, like, acting orders that he is standing in for the first sergeant. So he's got all the authority, but it's a temporary thing, and he's just acting in lieu of, because the other person's busy somewhere else, if that makes any sense whatsoever. So that's kind of what happens. And why I said that all started since John Taylor. John Taylor was the third president of the church. The second president was, as everybody knows, Bloody Brigham, Brigham Young, you know, the one with the universities named after him, the one who led the saints into the Salt Lake Valley, the one who has said many horrible things and committed atrocities against mankind. When Joseph Smith was killed, they didn't know specifically at the time who was going to follow in his footsteps and who was going to be the next prophet, because they didn't have anything set up. And the way I was taught growing up, and I haven't looked into this, and I haven't got to this part of Naked Mormonism, so I may be wrong. You should ask Bryce Blankenangle if any of this is correct. But from what I was taught, I guess Emma thought that their son should follow in his footsteps, like almost like monarchy, and rumor has it, or at least the church rumors has it, that's where the RLDS church came from, was that Emma Smith broke off when it wasn't her son who was next in line for the prophetship or whatever. Like I said, I don't know if that's correct. Probably isn't, but I don't know. That's just what they always told us. And then I guess there was also belief that Sidney Rigdon, I think, should have been the next in line because he was like Joseph's right-hand man. But they didn't have anyone leading the church for, I don't even remember how long it was. I want to say it was at least a few months. But then while addressing the saints, Brigham Young got up in front of him and he was talking, and reports had it that he all of a sudden looked like Joseph Smith and sounded like Joseph Smith, and everybody's like, oh, it's a sign from God. And so they made Brigham Young the next president of the church. And so that's how that went on. But then after that, he was the president of the church for over 30 years. He was the longest serving church president. But by the time he died, they kind of had it sorted, the way they were going to secede to the next president of the church. So, okay, this is a lot going on here. But one of the things I wanted to also talk about, let's see, because the Times and, well, the New York Times, that is, and several other papers all covered the story of Thomas Monson's death. And the New York Times article about it, I read it, and it didn't seem to be like harsh or rude or, you know, anything like that. But there were online petitions to have the person who wrote the obituary for Thomas Monson, there were online petitions to have him apologize for the article. And I thought that was very interesting. So then I went and read this article, and like I said, I didn't see anything extremely inflammatory. I mean, it was all matter of fact. It just stated. And so I just want to read some of this, and I will include the link in the show notes. But okay, so it said that he, Thomas Monson, who is the president of the church, died at age 90, facing vociferous demands to recognize same-sex marriage and weathering demonstrations at church headquarters by Mormon women pleading for the right to be ordained as priests, Mr. Monson did not bend. Teachings holding homosexuality to be immoral, bans on sexual intercourse outside male-female marriages, and an all-male priesthood would remain unaltered. So, I mean, he doubled down. He's the one who came out with that church regulation saying that children of same-sex partners could not be baptized into the church until after they turned 18 and after they renounced their parents and after they moved out and all this kind of stuff. So he is the one who came out with that. And it was also under his watch that Kate Kelly was charged with apostasy and excommunicated. And Kate Kelly was the one who founded an organization called Ordain Women. And I don't know much about it, but as you can just guess by the name of this organization she formed, it was an attempt to get the church to accept women as equals and allow them to receive the priesthood as well. And as you can guess, the old white man's club does not want to let the women join them because, you know, it's like Calvin and Hobbes when they're up in their clubhouse, no girls allowed, you know. And speaking of, my mom, bless her heart, she always sends me the conference and sign. And so, like I said, general conference is in April and October, and then the Ensign is a monthly church publication, has different articles in it from both church leaders, and there's sometimes ones that are submitted by just other members, and if they get approved, kind of like submitting to a magazine, you know, then they get published. But in May and November, you know, the months right after conference, they take all the talks from General Conference and they print it up and they put it in the next month's Ensign. And so my mom likes to always send me the Ensign because she knows I don't watch General Conference, because she always asks, did you watch it? And I'm like, no, I didn't catch it. Well, you can watch it online. But anyways, so right here, I'm sure you can hear it, but I'm holding my Ensign right here that I just barely cracked open because of this podcast recording. And right in the middle is, I mean, the whitest group of old men you will ever see in your life. It has the general authorities and general officers of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So at the top, it's got the first presidency, then right below it, it's got the Quorum of the Twelve. And just think, this is the old man centerfold, okay? So the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, the presidency of the 70, the general authority of 70s, and the presiding bishopric, and then the general officers, which are the presidencies for Sunday school, young women, relief society, primary, and young men. And let's see, out of all of these, okay, so in this centerfold, there are 124 people listed. And just to give you a slight idea of the structure of the church, 9 of them are women, and those are the general officers for young women's primary, which is the organization for the children, and Relief Society, which is the women's organization. And then within the General Authority of 70s, there are two black men. And, I mean, there's... Let me see. I want to say... There's two or three Orientals that I can see just at a quick glance, but it is all a majority of old white men. So, with that being said, it is no wonder that, you know, that this Kate Kelly was excommunicated for wanting to bring women into this old man's club. So I don't even know what people thought was so controversial about this obituary about him. Because, I mean, like I said, I read it. It seemed quite factual, both from a... I guess I could be called an apostate now, but from an Exmo perspective and from, you know, someone who was within the church when he was the leader, and when I was going to church and having fond memories of listening to his talks, I mean, the things covered were accurate. You know, it says, despite persistent demands for change on another feminist issue, Mr. Monson, who as president was considered by adherents to be God's, quote, prophet, seer, and revelator, close quote, did not open the door to women in the priesthood, which, like the Mormon hierarchy, has been male since the church was founded in the early 19th century. Critics say the ban on female priests has no explicit basis in church scripture, but efforts to overturn it were sometimes dealt with harshly. And that's where it goes and mentions this lady getting excommunicated for this. And it talks a little bit about the church and plural marriages. And then it also says that under Thomas Monson's, I want to say reign, but maybe that's not the right word. Maybe it is. During his reign of the church, right? The church allowed historians access to church documents and records to a remarkable degree. And I guess this is true because it was during this time that the church allowed them to publish things about Joseph's magic rock that he carried around in his hat. And I still have such a hard time, like, believing that was out there, but it was still, like, so quiet. I don't know, maybe because I was so disconnected to everything and was just going about my work and going home, and I wasn't dealing with any sort of church stuff on social media or in the news, and I didn't live up in, you know, the Mormon Valley there in Utah, so I missed a lot of that, I guess. And I think we all know that President Monson, as he is the one who put those restrictions on the children of, on the children of same-sex parents, he, in 2015, responded to the Supreme Court decision concerning same-sex marriage. And there was a letter read in Mormon churches saying that sexual relations outside heterosexual marriage were contrary to the laws of God. So, I mean, it even says down here that he doubled down on that. And I was not in the least bit surprised by that. And that led to that mass exodus of people where over 1,500 people went to Temple Square in Salt Lake City and resigned right then. And I really wish I could have gone and done that then and had the balls to do it, but oh well, I'm out now. So, yeah, so the original obituary, this is what it goes over. It talks about that, and then it also goes into, okay, he was born in Salt Lake City on, you know, August 21st, 1927. Talks about his kids, where he went to school, his career in the print trade. Well, he was a printer and worked for the Deseret News and the Deseret News Press and Deseret News Publishing Company. So, I mean, yeah, he worked with the church even before he became part of the church leadership. And he also participated in a bunch of humanitarian causes. And I guess from one of the other things I read, this is part of what people had a problem with this obituary, was that they focused too much on the history of the church and the controversy surrounding the women in the priesthood and the children of the of same-sex parents and same-sex marriage, and they didn't concentrate enough on his humanitarian work and the good things about him and his life and what he did and all this kind of stuff. But there's another article in the New York Times where they reacted to it. The Times did. And so they drew up some questions and talked to the obituary's editor, William McDonald, and he answered these questions. And this was a very interesting read and very good replies by him. And he basically said, well, our job, first and foremost, is to be a reporter and a journalist, and so we're looking at things. And okay, so we didn't go and we didn't sugarcoat it and we didn't sing his praises and say how awesome he was at all things. You know, we said, well, this is what happened. And he said that as journalists, when someone who has made the news dies, the obituary, part of it is they go back and they look at the things that made the news with that person. How did they end up in the news? What was going on that was so newsworthy about this person that they gained national attention? And so it's easy to say that the fact that he doubled down and said, no, women are not going to be ordained, and the fact that he said that children of same-sex parents cannot join the church until these stipulations have been met. And, you know, I mean, they also brought up the fact that he's the one that lowered the missionary age for young men from 19 to 18 and for young women from 21 to 19. So they did bring that up, but William McDonald, the editor, says, well, the things about the person that make the news in the first place, we revisit that in the obituary. And it was very good, and I think it was a very good answer for the criticisms that they were getting. But I will also include this in the show notes. Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to read it, by all means, don't read it. If you're not into all the Little Mormon drama, of course, if you're not into all the Little Mormon drama, I'm not too sure why you listen to me blather on about all kinds of stuff, but yeah, so, okay, so Russell M. Nelson is slotted to be the next president of the church, but that's not going to take place. He's not going to be, like, officially selected, if you will, until after Thomas S. Monson's funeral, they said, which I believe I saw was going to be on the 12th, so that's going to be in a couple days. But I was like, well, because I have this conference ensign, let me read something about, or read something that the future church president is talking about. And so I found an article by him, right in the middle, article, talk, whatever. And he had titled it, The Book of Mormon, What Would Your Life Be Like Without It? And he talks about going to a... He went to lecture at a university in Ghana and met an African tribal king. And after his talk, the king was asking him, just who are you? And he said, he's an ordained apostle of Jesus Christ. And he said, what can you tell me about Jesus Christ? And he says, may I ask what you already know about him? And I guess this king then said that, you know, he reads the Bible and he's quite the devout Christian and everything. And then so he asks him, well, that is to say, Russell Nelson asks him, well, did you know that Jesus came to the American continent? And he's, no, really? You know? And so he goes and gives him a Book of Mormon. And so this king declares that this is more precious than diamonds and rubies. And so then he goes on to make this point in his talk. Well, you know, if you were given a Book of Mormon or diamonds or rubies, which would you choose? You know, is it more precious to you than the diamonds and rubies? And it should be, and all this kind of stuff. So I was, I suffered through that so you wouldn't have to. But yeah, that's what I was reading and finding out about this soon to be church leader. But the interesting, well, I don't know if it's interesting, but he is already 3 years older than Thomas S. Monson was at the time of his passing. So I'm not sure how long he's gonna make it, because he is already 93. But I don't really have anything else to add. I already feel like I've just been rambling nonsense in your ear, but there's a little bit about the succession of Mormon prophets, church presidents, whatever you want to call it, how they go from one to the other, how that is handled during this time, so that it is, I mean, it's pretty much a seamless transition, that there's no church turmoil or anything like that. That's about it. So just want to thank y'all for joining me and listening to my rambling, and hopefully this this little breakdown of the ends of the church wasn't too boring for you. Yeah, so I will try and get this edited tonight and out tonight before I have to go back to work tomorrow. So, okay, yeah, little side note, my knee is healing up real well. I'm doing great. I got cleared by my doctor to go back to full duty tomorrow, so I get to go back to work, which kind of sucks, but at the same time, I'm starting to get bored. Though it has been so much fun just sitting here hanging out with my little dragon. He's right here. Say hi, Malcolm. Hi, Malcolm. So I've been hanging out with him and the dogs, and it's just been lots of fun, and I have actually quite enjoyed the solitude, but it is time for me to get back to work, which really is depressing. But I did get a message from somebody this week that was asking a little bit about my jewelry business that I mentioned last episode. So if you are interested in that, it is Bijoux and Bangles, which is spelled BIJOUXANDBANGLES.com. And I do have stuff up there. I will do custom orders. There's a Facebook page for it too and everything. So if you are interested in that, check it out. I will mail stuff. I take secure payments through PayPal, but I mean, that's just my stuff. I've been tinkering, making a couple of paracord bracelets recently too, and so I've got that pretty well down. So, that is it on that, and I guess that's it. So, thank you for listening, and good night, everybody. I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.